Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Around 11:30, where we had a large explosion. So by next 10 minutes, I got a call that there are some casualties, and the whole thing happened close to a village called Apiati.
Ghanaian police investigate circumstances of an explosion that left at least 13 people dead.
The corruption in the country has been the root cause of underdevelopment of this country, and that's why Malawi is one of the poor countries, which I think the major reason being the fact that the corruption is very high.
Catholic clerics call on Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera and his government to bolster security for employees of the Anti-Corruption Bureau.
There is nothing that we have seen that is tangible from the fight against corruption. So I am saying, look, who is watching the watchdog? They'll come and harass me in my home, yet they could have more property than myself, but no one is asking them to account on how they acquired their properties.
And a Zambian parliamentarian demands a lifestyle audit for investigators of the Anti-Corruption Commission. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Ghana, the municipal chief executive of Prestia Huni Valley says the police are investigating circumstances that led to the explosion that left at least 13 people dead, many injured, and destroyed property. Dr. Isaac Dasmani also says Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia, who led a government delegation to visit victims of the explosion, promised the administration will pay the medical bills for all victims admitted to the hospital. He says about 500 buildings were destroyed in the disaster. The police say an accident between a motorcycle and a truck filled with explosives led to the blast at Bogosu Apieti, a village about 186 miles from the capital, Accra. For the latest development, I reached Dr. Isaac Dasmani, Municipal Chief Executive of Prestia Huni Valley.
It was yesterday around 11:30 where we had a large explosion. So by next 10 minutes, I got a call that there are some casualties, and the whole thing happened close to a village called Apiati. So we reached there, and then when we got there, so a lot of people were injured, and then some were also dead, and then we were able to convey some to the hospital. As I speak to you today, the situation is quite normalized, and the Vice President of the Republic of Ghana came here with his entourage to commiserate with us. And as I speak, most of them has been discharged, and four were in a critical condition, and the four were transferred to Kumasi Hospital, where they are receiving treatment.
So is there an investigation going on to find out what really happened leading to the explosion?
Yeah, the security agencies have kick-started their investigation, and within no time, I'm sure this thing will come up.
There have been a series of criticisms about indiscipline on the roads and how explosives are handled in your area where, as you know, mining is very prevalent. Minister Ambrose Derry has called on the company that was handling the company that to fix its problem. As a municipal chief executive, what is your take on all that has been happening so far?
Yeah, actually, most of the time, the way they are transporting these kind of chemicals, they have some escorts that normally lead some of these products through the main street and others. And I think this one, I don't know actually what happened and the incident occurred. But for now, the security agencies are doing their work, and we feel that the necessary measures will be put in place to ensure that this will never occur again.
Mr. Dasmani, some people are even saying that the company should be sued. What are you hearing?
Yeah, well, for now, I think the company, as I speak to you, I have not even seen the owners of the company. I have not met anybody yet because I'm in the midst of controlling the situation and others. So I think that the necessary authorities will take up the measures and then probably take the necessary sanction against the companies. For now, they have taken over from me. So the ministry and in charge of others also handle the rest of the issues.
Mr. Dasmani, what has been the reaction of the people in the area who are victims of this explosion? Since you went around visiting some of them, what have they been telling you?
Well, right now, most all of them are calm. We have provided some relief items for them. And for now, they are calm. For them, the whole situation is calm. And we are only waiting for some of them to be discharged and others, and then we'll see the way forward.
What has been the reaction of the vice president since he came to visit the area and then went to see the victims or visit the victims?
The regional minister actually, the vice president communicated with their relatives and then at the same time to promise to support them to rebuild, some of their structures and then make sure that all the things that they may need, their hospital bills, the government will take over and then take care of all the victims and others.
What has been your message to the people who were victims of this explosion?
What I want to say is that this is an unfortunate situation. And then we are hoping that some of these things doesn't occur again. So we are all supporting them and then making sure that we take good care of them. So we are all in them. We are all in the problem with them, and then making sure that at least they get the best of the support that they need.
Dr. Isaac Dasmani is the Municipal Chief Executive of Prestia Huni Valley. He spoke with me from Bogoso in Ghana's Western Region. In Liberia, the opposition Unity Party is calling on the government to bolster security in the capital, Monrovia, and other parts of the country. The party says high youth unemployment is creating hardship for citizens. This after a stampede at a church in Monrovia left 29 people dead and many injured during an all-night worship service. Local media reports say an attempted robbery by an armed youth group led to the stampede. The Unity Party contends that a lack of employment opportunities has led youth groups and street gangs to resort to theft and other crimes. But critics say the Unity Party is also to blame for the prevailing security and unemployment situation facing the country. They say the party failed during its 2 full year terms in office to reduce unemployment and curb crime. Muhammad Ali is the National General Secretary of the Unity Party. He tells me that his group is not to blame for the current situation in Liberia. The group has since called for an independent inquiry into the stampede.
Our understanding is that it started as a result of some intrusion into a church service by wayward youth, or we usually call them disadvantaged youth. Many Liberians know them as Zogos. They went into the midst of their church goers and threatened to make away with valuable items. And so in the fear, people began running, and you had so many kids and women among the crowd. So in that stampede, people were trampled on, and that led to the death of about 29 persons. In fact, confirmed 29 persons died.
Do people in Liberia feel safe?
But let me say, Peter, we call for investigation. And to your question, absolutely people do not feel safe in this country any longer, especially in Monrovia, the capital city, and its surrounding. Our streets are now paraded by criminals, broad day. After 7 p.m., you do not walk in the streets alone. You'll be attacked by these criminals. They made away with cell phones and anything you have. And if you resist, they have knives, they have weapons or all sorts of. The government is not doing anything at the moment to address the growing security problems within our country. And this is causing serious fear. So you come to Liberia, you are in Monrovia, you are in the surroundings of Monrovia. When it's after seven, it looks like people are in self-imposed curfew. You have to be at your house for fear of not being attacked in the street by criminals. But this is even extending to the homes of private and peaceful citizens. So we have consistently questioned the measures government is taking to remedy the security situation, to fight crimes in the streets.
But Mohammed, some people are saying your party that ruled the country for two consecutive terms contributed significantly to the prevailing security situation in the country because you didn't do anything to improve security. So why blame the current administration?
So Peter, to say that we didn't do anything is a false and malicious statement. The Unity Party for 12 years restored the security system of this country. We began rebuilding our security sector. We began to train our security in such a way that the ordinary people will see the security as their friends and their compatriots, people they can usually run to. And I will not deny that the criminals were not in the street, but at all, it was not at this level. And one thing that is increasing this is the level of poverty that is engraving in our country. You go everywhere, people are begging, and when they cannot get their way through, they resort to criminal actions. And so if we cannot turn to these criminals, we cannot turn to these disadvantaged youth to create rehabilitation programs for them, it's going to continue to increase. 4 or 5 years on, they cannot tell us the security they have provided for the country. They cannot tell us to what degree or extent or by what rate they have reduced poverty. They cannot tell us by any statistical means what amount of jobs or number of jobs they have created. So this is nothing that is the creation of the Unity Party. It is the creation of this government.
Mohammed Ali is the National General Secretary of the Unity Party. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Malawi, a group of Catholic clerics is calling on President Lazarus Chakwera and his government to bolster security for employees of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, or ACB. A group of Catholic bishops, the Episcopal Conference of Malawi, say they are pleased with the ongoing work of the anti-graft agency in the Southern African country. They warn that, in their words, corruption fights back, and that additional security is needed to protect Martha Chizuma, head of the SCB, and its employees from potential attacks. The statements come after political activist Born Kalindo threatened to close some offices of the anti-graft agency. He accuses the ACB of being influenced by the international community. The Catholic bishops say the country's underdevelopment and poverty among a large segment of the population can be attributed to corruption. Reverend Dr. Henry Saindi is the spokesperson for the Catholic Church in Malawi. He tells me that the clerics are pleased with the ongoing fight against corruption.
We are all satisfied in the manner that the Anti-Corruption Bureau has demonstrated their determination to fight against this vice, the corruption in the country. The corruption in the country has been the root cause of underdevelopment of this country, and that's why Malawi is one of the poor countries, which I think the major reason being the fact that the corruption is very high. So the Director General for Anti-Corruption Bureau, Ms. Martha Chizuma, in the past 6 months, she has demonstrated that determination of fight against the corruption. And you are aware of the fact that whosoever is fighting corruption also fights back. That means those that are benefiting from corruption, they will fight back.
So specifically, what are the Catholic bishops asking to see that the government does to protect these employees of the Anti-Corruption Bureau?
So the bishops are considering basically three things. One, they are asking the government to ensure that there is no interference whatsoever in the operations of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, in the current investigations that are taking place. Secondly, the bishops are also saying those that are involved in the investigation of cases, including the Director General of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, the security of these people must be guaranteed. Thirdly, they are also saying, let the Anti-Corruption Bureau be funded. And that's why they are appealing also to the donor community to provide funding, because we are talking about cases in magnitude, huge cases, corruption cases that would require a lot of money. So they are saying, let the Anti-Corruption Bureau be capacitated with the resources that they need in order to do the investigations, so that these cases are prosecuted, regardless of who is involved in these cases.
You talked about corruption fighting back. Do you think the lives of Madam Chizoma and her subordinates are in danger?
It is possible. That is a possibility. So that's why the bishops are more or less like setting a warning signal to whosoever is involved, that these people, since they have shown the determination to fight against corruption, let these people be protected and their security must be guaranteed.
Well, some people have also expressed concern that sometimes the Anti-Corruption Bureau have been politically pressured to go after opponents of the administration or critics of the administration. What's the take of the Catholic bishops regarding this concern?
Not at the moment. Not at the moment is the leadership that we have at the Anti-Corruption Bureau. That's the whole reason why the bishops are praising the leadership of Anti-Corruption Bureau, Ms. Martha Chizuma, because she has shown that she can fight corruption even in the current government or in the previous regime. So that is exactly what is happening. So that's why the bishops are praising Ms. Martha Chizuma because of the approach that she has taken.
So the bishops are pleased with the ongoing fight against corruption currently being undertaken by the Anti-Corruption Bureau under Madam Chizuma's leadership?
Yes, exactly. We are very, very happy that we have a lady who is determined to fight corruption. But she cannot fight corruption alone. She needs everybody's support. And that's why the bishops have decided to add their voice to the fight against the corruption.
Reverend Dr. Henry Saindi is the spokesperson for the Catholic Church in Malawi. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. A Zambian parliamentarian is demanding a lifestyle audit for investigators of the Anti-Corruption Commission, or ACC. Munir Zulu, who routinely accuses officials of the ACC of being corrupt, says the anti-graft agency is incapable of doing its duty. This after saying governments have used the commission to go after opponents and critics, accusations the ACC sharply denies. Meanwhile, the agency has called on the parliamentarian to provide evidence to back up his claims. The ACC also expressed concern about allegations and attacks that it says undermine the integrity and professionalism of the institution. Legislator Munir Zulu tells me that he plans to introduce a motion in parliament for the establishment of an independent institution that will be empowered to investigate officials of the Anti-Corruption Commission.
You see, when the Youth Dawn was elected, they preached a lot on graft fight. They said they're here to fight corruption. And we have seen most of the former ministers in the previous government being searched in their homes. In some cases, they are even getting as little as 150 kwacha. from someone's wife, and yet there is nothing that we have seen that is tangible from the fight against corruption. So I am saying, look, who is watching the watchdog? They'll come and harass me in my home, yet they could have more property than myself, but no one is asking them to account on how they acquired their properties, all right? I put up a challenge, and no one wants to talk about it. I've said, can we go to Ministry of Lands? We do a name search on the list of properties that most of these investigators own. It's going to shock them. Instead, they thought that they were going to intimidate me.
Why do you think they trying to intimidate you? Because I understand you are saying that the Anti-Corruption Commission or ACC as it stands now cannot fight corruption. Why do you make such an assertion?
You see, we all have access to information using friends that are either somewhere at lands or closer to someone that they see the list, the names. I've got no problem with the fight against corruption, but for you to fight, you must come with clean hands. So I'm saying let the officers be subjected to a certain form of watchdog so that their fight is not seen to be vindictive or witch hunt. It's a political persecution and not a fight against corruption. So I'm saying, look, I want to support you guys to fight corruption, but can we, first of all, have credible officers in the fight against corruption? Let them declare what they own, how they earned what they have.
The anti-corruption says it's saddened and disappointed by your ongoing media attacks and that the allegations you are making against officers are baseless and unfounded just to impugn on the professionalism and conduct, integrity of some of these officers who are doing their work as part of the effort to root out corruption in Zambia.
Look, that statement was issued to gain public sympathy. They are not responding to my challenge. We know of people that have concealed properties in their wives' names. So we are saying, can we do a search and account for it? If it's clean, why are you going to conceal your property? Can they declare so that we know when they're searching us, it's not to attract unnecessary attention that they're fighting corruption? You cannot come to Equity with dead hands. Come with clean hands.
Did you ever say or allege that the Anti-Corruption Commission wants to arrest you and inject you with a foreign substance in order to eliminate you?
Yes, I said that.
But that is a wild allegation.
But look, how can I complain about Peter and report to Peter about my complaint? Let there be an independent institution to hear me out, not Peter.
But you are a member of parliament. Can't you address this through the channels in parliament?
If you remember my debate on the floor of the House, I was told to withdraw my statement. So what do you do in that case? You've got a platform to address it through parliament, then you are told to withdraw that statement. The chairperson that they told me to take a seat and stop debating on the SEC. So it's not like parliament has given us 100% freedom to exhaust our debates. You can be stopped. You can even be ignored for the whole session without you debating. There are so many times I've proposed to debate on the floor of the House. The speaker has never given me that space. She's not as accommodating the way she accommodates other people. So I'm not shy to come out very strong.
But I understand you were given an opportunity to present your evidence of corruption against officials of the Anti-Corruption Commission and that you unceremoniously and disrespectfully, without regard to courtesy, walked out and left the office even with your lawyer present.
Peter, I didn't storm out of the offices. I said goodbye to them.
So what is the end game of this, your crusade against officials of the Anti-Corruption Commission, if I may put it
Look, Peter, for argument's sake, I was being interviewed by two officers, all right? What if it were those two that I'm alleging to be corrupt? Why should I talk to them? Are they going to investigate themselves? So I'm moving a motion when we open parliament next month to create Zambia Bureau of Investigations that is going to be a watchdog where I can go to and complain to an independent institution.
Is that your end game?
Yes, it is.
Munir Zulu is a Zambian member of parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Kenya, the Orange Democratic Movement, or ODM, has sharply denied accusations that it plans to instigate violence during the upcoming general election in August. The denial comes after the United Democratic Alliance, led by incumbent Deputy President William Ruto, sent a letter to President Uhuru Kenyatta and the International Criminal Court about potential violence during the vote. But the ODM dismissed the letter and demanded proof that the party is planning to undermine the polls. Voters in Kenya are scheduled to vote for a new president, members of the National Assembly and of the Senate on August 9. Meanwhile, the ODM is carrying out its primaries to select candidates to represent the party. Edwin Sifuna is the General Secretary of the Orange Democratic Movement, or ODM. He tells me that his party is committed to peaceful elections.
This is significant because it is assumed in Kenya that the government who are incumbent in their respective carry the opinion of the most of the people in the region. So the endorsement is seen as an endorsement from those regions. So that is the significance of this case.
Now, does that tell you that out of the 47 or so, if nearly three quarters endorse Raila Odinga, will this necessarily translate into positive electoral prospect in the elections?
There is somewhere in our constitution a provision that if 24 of the counties vote in support of a presidential candidate, it is assumed that that presidential candidate is already elected. So if the party governor who, if they retain their positions in their respective governorate, support him now, it means that he's already as good as elected for the next 4 years.
Should Deputy President William Ruto's camp be worried about this endorsement?
He should, of course, because he has been harping a lot on having support of governors, having support of some governors who are still hiding their support for him and all that. So now that it is an open secret that 30 of them support Raila Odinga, this should be very worrying to Mr. Ruto.
How do you see the political climate at the moment regarding the political prospect or the presidential prospect of who possibly wins the upcoming presidential election, looking at what is on the ground at the moment?
Looking at the situation currently in Kenya, there is still a small group of people who are calling themselves One Kenya Alliance, who have not yet decided who is going to be the presidential candidate. However, yesterday, Mr. Musyoka, who is one of the leading lights of that group, came out claiming that he will not budge, and he said he is going to vote for the president. So that is as good as having one of them already decided, and that means four of them out. The four who are left out are basically loyal. Three of them are loyal: Leongo, Beverly, and Kambula. And then there is one Mr. Rathmore from this one. So once these three or four of them choose what they are going to do with their vote, then the election will be set.
Angina, do you foresee a possible runoff between former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and Deputy President William Ruto? Because the Deputy President is on record to have said that Raila Odinga must commit to accepting the results of the elections.
With regards to the first part of your question, it is that I do not see a runoff because I do not see the Kalonzo Musyoka gunning enough votes to make a dent on the vote that can be gotten by Mr. Raila Odinga to force him to go for another round. On the other hand, there is very little support in that region for Mr. Ruto, so that will also not happen. So the vote that Mr. Musyoka made Ghana will be not the total Kamba vote, but part of it, as
some of the persons there can vote as for their governors. It is Governor Mutatibwana, Governor Nino, and Governor Mudoa. Since they do not accept the presidency of the fellow Cameraman, Mr. Mishoka, I think they will carry part of the vote to wherever they will go, and they are most likely they are going to be the president of Cam. So that means that Mr. Dinda will get the location to vote for Mukamban.
Edward Sifuna is the General Secretary of the Orange Democratic Movement, or ODM. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Meanwhile, a majority of governors in Kenya has endorsed former Prime Minister Raila Odinga ahead of the upcoming general election. Odinga is the presidential candidate for the Orange Democratic Movement, or ODM. Upon endorsing him, up to 30 governors expressed hope that he will protect devolution as enshrined in the constitution. This after saying their endorsement was a result of the ODM leader's role in championing the move to decentralize governance in the country. Devolution is one of the major changes to Kenya's constitution in 2010. Legal experts say it is the proper distribution of state functions and powers among the three arms of government, such as the executive, legislature, and the judiciary. For analysis about the endorsement of the governors, I reach Angina Ojwang, a political commentator in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
This is significant because it is assumed in Kenya that the governors who are incumbent in their respective regions carry the opinion of the most of the people in their regions. So the endorsement is seen as an endorsement from those regions. So that is the significance of this.
Now, does that tell you that out of the 47 or so, if nearly three quarters endorse Raila Odinga, will this necessarily translate into positive electoral prospect in the elections?
There is somewhere in our constitution a provision that if 24 of the counties vote in support of a presidential candidate, it is assumed that that presidential candidate is already elected. So if the 30 governors, who, if they retain their positions in their respective governorate, support him now, it means that he's already as good as elected for the next 5 years.
Should Deputy President William Ruto's camp be worried about this endorsement?
He should, of course, because he has been harping a lot on having support of governors, having support of some governors who are still hiding their support for him and all that. So now that it is an open secret that 30 of them support Raila Odinga, this should be very worrying to Mr. Ruto.
How do you see the political climate at the moment regarding the political prospect or the presidential prospect of who possibly wins the upcoming presidential election, looking at what is on the ground at the moment?
Looking at the situation currently in Kenya, there is still a small group of people who are calling themselves One Kenya Alliance, who have not yet decided who is going to be the presidential candidate. However, yesterday, Mr. Mutioka, who is one of the leading lights of that group, came out claiming that he will not budge, and he said he is going to vote for the president. So that is as good as having one of them already decided, and that means four of them out. The four who are left out are basically lawyers. Three of them are lawyers, Leongo, Beverly, and the Kambula. And then there is one Mr. Kelly Lemoy. From this one. So once these three or four of them choose what they are going to do with their vote, then the election will be set.
Angina, do you foresee a possible runoff between former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and Deputy President William Ruto? Because the Deputy President is on record to have said that Raila Odinga must commit to accepting the results of the elections.
With regards to the first part of your question, It is that I do not see Iran now because I do not see the Colonel Ethiopia running enough votes to make a dent on the vote that can be gotten by Mr. Inodinga to force him to go for another round. On the other hand, there is very little support in that region for Mr. Ruto, so that will also not happen. So the vote that Mr. Ishioka made Ghana will be not the total Kamba vote, but part of it, as some of the persons there can vote as for their governors. That is Governor Musa Tibwana, Governor Hulu, and Governor Mudoa. Since they do not accept the presidency of the fellow Kambaman, Mr. Mishoka, I think they will carry part of the vote to wherever they will go, and they are most likely they are going to be the president of Kamb. So that means that Mr. Dinda will get the message of the vote from Kamban.
Angina Ojwang is a political commentator. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Uganda Medical Association, an umbrella group for health workers, is calling on the government to keep its promises to enact a pay raise. The group also expressed concern over reports the health ministry has yet to present a budget to parliament to meet its demands. At a news conference in the capital, Kampala, the head of the association, Dr. Samuel Odongo Oledu, called on the government to provide adequate personal protective equipment for workers who are in the front line of the battle against the coronavirus. He also expressed concern that some officials at the health ministry appear to be sabotaging President Yoweri Museveni's directive to increase the salaries of health workers. The group suspended its industrial action after an agreement with the government to increase the pay of doctors and other health workers. For the latest development, I reached Dr. Samuel Odongo Oledu, president of the Uganda Medical Association.
The ultimatum basically is in reflection to the agreement we had with government to suspend the industrial action. And the agreement, according to Uganda Medical Association and the Doctors Fraternity, we agreed with government that the implementation of the presidential directives, especially when it comes to the chronic lack of drugs and sundries in the hospitals, we are so much perturbed by doctors being placed in different hospitals, and their presence is literally having less benefit when it comes to service delivery. The issue of drugs shortage, medical equipment, and having doctors dying because of being exposed. We had minimum sundries, we had minimum protective gear, but this of late, the past 1 month, that is November, we had a slight increase in the PPEs in the different hospitals, but still, they were not enough.
Have you engaged the government or officials at the health ministry to address some of these concerns that you have? Because obviously you have agreed with the government. The reason why you stopped the industrial action or strike.
We've engaged government. Actually, we've had different meetings with the government officials. And why I'm bringing up this issue is government has worked on the issue of PPE, protective gear. They have supplied, but they've not supplied enough. They've supplied, yes, but not enough. But when it comes to critical other issues, the drugs that we need to use in the hospitals, you saw the story running that the prime minister had to go to Mitiana Health Center for Mitiana Hospital to see by herself to prove that patients were asked to give a sum of about 150,000 shillings to buy drugs and consumables, a mother who was sanctioned for seizure. And for sure, she went on the ground and found out the mother was sanctioned for seizure. But what you use? There were no seizure, there were no sutures, There were no gloves. There were no consumables to use on this matter. In theater, even the anesthetic drugs were not available. So they were last supplied in September last year. And you'd expect that consortment to handle the cases up to January.
You said that you are informed that the Ministry of Health has yet to submit the budget for salary increment of doctors and health workers. How did you know this? And in your engagement, have you brought this up with the officials at the health ministry?
Yes, we had engagements with different government stakeholders. We had engagements with the Committee on Health in Parliament, and this was not yet done. Ministry of Health had not submitted their budget when it comes to the payment of doctors, the welfare of doctors, and also the full budget, including the drugs and sundries. And this is the pain that we have, because the budget framework process is ongoing, so we'd expect these factors to be included, because it was a directive passed by the president. So now, why aren't people respecting a presidential directive? This must be factored in by Ministry of Health, so that Minister of Finance can capture it in the budget. 400 billion was earmarked for the salary of doctors. 250 billion was earmarked for this increment of drugs and sundries. So the question is, why aren't these things factored in by Ministry of Health? So the delay.
You said at the presser that a number of officials at the health ministry are working to sabotage the presidential directive and want to increase the salary over the next 5 years, as has been the case in the past. Do you know these people who are doing it, and why haven't you submitted their names to all these institutions you've been engaging in order to address your concerns speedily?
Yes, we are not in the battle of name and shame. We are not in the battle of victimization of individuals. We are in the battle of we are looking at institutional structure and operation. That is clear. There are individuals who want to sabotage the directive. There are individuals, for example, if you went to public service, the individuals who came up with the ideology of stepwise increment. How do you have stepwise increment on already earmarked 400 billion for the health workers? So they want to include other civil servants into this allocation of the 400 billion. Please, health workers have given their lives. They've died in giving a service the past 2 years. So there's no way you can say also someone who is a district chief, or for example, a chief in a sub-country who was actually home-seated the past 2 years is meant to have an increment at such a time when our priority is on health and the economy.
Dr. Samuel Odongo Oledo is the president of the Ugandan Medical Association. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
kushepta bigi bigi tukianza kesha kujiki jingi nabaki kiku moja pambio na jitesa digi digi kama wataiwesa digi digi mpizi na ongeza ni zindi zindi sijelivye u
Mr. Otuya, no Peter, Chiracha, Current. And oh, yes, it's your old girl. Nasemiti, Makumi, Mamawa, Nawaya, Womo, Konamu, Kaya, Wa, Unsua, Domo, Bissua, and Yename, yeah, me, Michael Johnson, Uka, Uka, and Nuria, Uka, 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 and Nuria, Uka, Uka, Senu yeni je enkuru trenen ya enu demin peo yem fraye di wujin chia enkuru tren aya kawashe dem enu yes you see oh boy na semi ye wase teni na mawa na usu ye
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor William Eagle and producer Douglas Impuga, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the disobedient fowl only obeys in a pot of soup. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.